course revision and examination technique. We want to consider how we can make the most effective use of our time in terms of pre-examination revision, and then how we can most effectively present our examination work to obtain the highest mark. Very simply, I find that if you tell students what's expected of them, they tend to do much better and secure a much higher mark in the final examination. The key point simply is this: we like you very much, but we do not want to see you again, in the sense that we do not want any resets, either in the reset this year or in future years. Sit the exam, pass the exam well, and ensure that you have a very good overall mark in your degree programme. The examination is very straightforward. There are no trick questions, there are no difficult questions, there are no questions which are asked about material that's not covered, there's no mixed questions, so we don't mix different parts of the course together, and there's no quotas. We do not have to fail or pass any specific number or have any limits on the number of merits or distinctions. What we're trying to assess is what you know, what you've learned, rather than what you don't know and what you've not learned. And that's the objective, is to show off how much you have learned, how much you've absorbed during the course of the year. The key is, as I've explained, is structured preparation, it's structured revision, and it's relevant detail in the examination. The person that can present the most relevant detail around the specific question asked will obtain the highest mark. It is as simple as that. I'll just make one point on problems. Very often, examinations will include either essay questions or problem questions. The problem with problems is that you always miss sub-issues and sub-problems within the problem. Problems, you can get higher marks by writing less very often, but the problems with problems is that you always miss a sub-problem. Always. So the key point is this. You are going to prepare structured outlines, structured revision notes, so that you can use those either for a full essay-type question or as a checklist in a problem situation. This has happened to me so many times, especially at the undergraduate level. I would have a very good exam, but as soon as I walk out the door, immediately I realise I forgot to mention that, and I forgot to mention this, and I could have mentioned that. The problem with problems is that you focus on the problem in that you're missing peripheral areas around it, you miss other subjects and issues which are raised in the problem, very often that the examiners themselves don't see when they write the problem the first time. So what you're doing is this: it's structured revision, it's structured preparation, and the same outline notes, answers, structured control systems, templates that you're going to prepare, you can use them either as outlines for essays, that all you will simply do is adjust to reflect the particular question asked, or you use it as a checklist in the problem. So you look at the problem, you identify the key issue, and you solve that, but you'll then have extra time, maybe 10, 20, 30 minutes. So what you then do is you go back over it, you look through your checklist, and you try to see what else can I build in. So you're going to build up your answers. One of the key problems that used to arise in examinations is that you will have a limit of some form. There's a constraint. It's either going to be a time constraint, 3 or 4 hours for the examination, or it's going to be a word limit in a dissertation. The core point is this: everyone is under the same constraint, but you're effectively competing with each other, and it's the person that can get the most relevant detail down in the time or word limit constraint that's applied is going to get the highest mark. It really is as simple as that. So a lot of it comes down to technique and, as I've said already, revision, so that you have all of this information ready and available that you can use and then present in the examination under examination conditions. Let me just go through some of the other key points in this revision note. The core point, as far as I'm concerned, of the course is professional preparation. We want you to become very good finance lawyers so that you can handle and manage these transactions in class and work in an office and work for clients. That's the core objective, is professional preparation. Passing the exam is almost ancillary to that. It's a small, relatively minor part of the overall process, but clearly it's something we need to do so that we can ensure that your degree is awarded and that you get as high a mark as possible in the final examination. So the key point is this is a course on professional preparation. The exam is secondary, although even then, the exam itself we can do very well in so long as we understand what's expected. The core point simply is this: the subject is enormous, it is huge, but the actual examination and the examination content is much narrower and only represents a very small part of the larger total subject. How can we determine what that is? That's controlled by the university syllabus, and this is all in the text. We look at the syllabus for the course, we look at the course notes, the course syllabus that you're giving at the beginning of the year, we can identify the key sections, the key parts within that, and we can extract from that a structured outline for the whole of the course, and we can see all the key parts of the course. In this case, it's the structure and nature of financial markets and the international financial system, including all of the key markets. It's the international loan market, it's the international bond market, it's the shorter duration, medium-term note, euro note, commercial paper markets, it's party liability, it's loan transfers, which bridge the bond and the loan markets, it's stock markets and exchanges, and then it's the nature of market control, which in this case is essentially self-regulatory through the work of the trade associations and the standard documentation that they produce. So essentially, that's the course, that's the syllabus, so the examination has to be structured around that. You'll have 6 questions in the exam, you have to answer 3 because this is a 30 credit course. If it was shorter, you'd only have to answer 2, but because it's a 30 credit, you need to answer 3. But you can see the basic course from that course structural outline. What will then happen is this: using that outline and going over past examination papers, you get a very strong command control sense of the examination content and what's expected from any future examination. So look at the syllabus, look at the past papers, and then we're going to work through all of the core materials to see how all of the materials reflect that structure, and then we can use all of this in the final examination. I have on the system prepared a separate review section where I have gone over all of the key parts of the course and I have identified all of the key documents and I've renumbered them to create a structured set of revision notes so that you can cover all of the key points and you have all of that ready and available to assist you with your revision preparation. The key point again, this is bottom left, is structured revision. What we're trying to do is this: the subject's huge, but if we break it down and we have a structured outline for the course, for the key parts of the course, and then within each of these key parts, course summary outline, and I give you lists and tables or just index for my chapters, we can get in control of all of this and we can manage a massive amount of information which we can then use in the examination and then later for professional and other purposes. In the examination itself, what will then happen is this: you have your outline for the whole course and then you'll have your sub-outlines for each of the key parts of the course, so you are ready to take on any question that might come up in the examination. Do not be surprised if a question in the examination looks unusual or something that you haven't seen before. What examiners specifically do is they ask questions in different ways every time. Very often, the core material supporting a question will be very similar. So even if you are surprised initially and immediately, just calm down, read the question again. Very often, you will find it's something that you've already covered, and it's just that the way it's presented took you by surprise. So long as you do not let that interfere with your overall examination work presentation and technique, you will be absolutely fine. In the examination itself, what we're trying to do is this: we're reading the questions, you'll go through the questions first and you'll work out which questions you want to do in which order. This is very important because what you're trying to do is this: as I highlighted before, you're trying to explain, present as much relevant detail as you can. And all of that's going to come from the course. So what you're trying to do is this. You need to organize the questions in an order so that you can present as much total amount of information as possible. To give you an example, I will almost always try to do the questions in the same order that they're taught, because then I can build in the different parts of the course in each section. So, for example, my first question, I will always want to try and build in some maybe general historical information, background to the markets, and always all of my key definitions. You need to define all of your key terms. So it almost doesn't even matter what the question is. I'm always going to have a sort of standard opening so that I can build all that information in and I can present that information. As I'm then working through the different questions and the different parts of the course, I'm going to want to do the same for each part of the course. If I'm doing a loan question, I will have some background information to the loan market, historical development, importance, significance, content, structure. Then I'll focus on the question. I'll then do the same again on the bond question or on whatever area that I'm looking at. On the development, what we're essentially doing is this. We're going to identify the problem, if it's a problem question, or the issue, if it's an SE question. They're very similar. You're either going to have a factual problem or you're going to have a more academic, professional issue you're going to have to resolve in each case, whether it's an essay question or whether it's a problem question. Essentially, what we need to do is this. We need to identify the facts and the problem. Secondly, we need to identify the law. We need to apply the facts to the law. We need to come up with a solution, reconciliation. Very often we need to be careful, are there any gaps left that we need to try and fix separately? And then we'll come up with a final set of conclusions and close. It's very simple. All questions are basically the same, whether it's a problem or an essay, if we look at it that way. And that's what we're going to do in the development section. What we're then going to do is, in an examination, you'll have a final concluding paragraph. It doesn't have to be a formal set of conclusions, but it's just ensuring that the final solution is clear and that you're presenting it to the examiner. Very often students just write, and then they stop and go on to the next question. Try to ensure that everything's clear and that your examiner knows what your answer is to that specific question. If necessary, you go back and identify the specific question asked and answer that. Very often what you can do is this. A lot of questions can be asked in different ways. They will then involve the same amount of underlying core material, which has to be presented. But then when you get to the end, you still have to go back to the beginning and answer the question that you were asked to deal with. You will lose a lot of marks if you don't do that. If you only present a lot of basic factual legal information without answering the question, you will lose a lot of marks in the exam. So make sure you answer the question at the very end. In terms of exam technique, the key point, as I've stressed, highlighted already, is structured preparation. Very often you will pass the exam not in the examination itself, but in the structured preparatory work that you organize, have ready, have available beforehand. You're reviewing the whole course, you're breaking it down, you're dividing it into key sections based on the syllabus, you're then reading the past papers to get a feel for the types of core questions that comes up, the type of level of detail they're looking for, and then you'll have sub outlines and summaries, tables in each of the key sections. I have basically provided all of that for you. You have outlines, chapters, summaries, tables, models on everything. You just have to go back over it and ensure that you understand all of it and that you can use all of it in the examination. Key point again is relevant detail. The person that can incorporate, squeeze the maximum amount of relevant detail gets the highest mark. Relevant authorities. You should always source all of your primary materials to show that you understand them. So any statutes, regulations, treaties, conventions, anything like that, you must source. You must build that in because that's what the examiners will expect, as well as any case law. In this particular course, there's not a lot of case law where it's relevant. Build it in. That's how you build up your marks. I have dealt with all of this in the footnotes as well as in separate ancillary notes. In particular, for example, on party liability, the more detail you build in, the higher a mark you will get. Where there's case law relevant, build it in. It will look bad if you don't. If the examiner knows that there's case law there and you don't refer to it, You won't lose marks, but you're certainly not going to get a particularly high mark by not having used that opportunity. In some examination situations, you are encouraged not to refer to secondary sources, which would include books, journal articles, legal articles, and other materials online. At this level of work, we expect secondary sources as well. And it also looks very good for you to demonstrate your sort of controlled command of the subject if you can explain that you understand. What are all the main books? What are all the main articles? What are all the main other sources that may be relevant in any particular part of the course? The key point is this. You don't have to have bought the book. You do not have to have the book on the table. You don't even have to have read the book, but you need to know of the book, what it covers, and its availability. And this is the key point in terms of professional preparation. When you're in an office situation and you're under stress and the clients need advice on something quickly, specifically, you need to know where to find things. You do not have to have everything in your head at any one point, but you need to know where to be able to find stuff. So you need to be familiar with all the key books in this area. All of those books are made available in the syllabus at the beginning of the course and in the study pack. They're all provided. And what I strongly encourage you to do at all times is become familiar with those. So even if you just go online, find the book, find the index, the contents listing, and either keep that a copy of that on your system or print it, that's what you're learning. You need to know where to find information. I'll just give you one example. If you had to find information very quickly on state immunity in an international loan situation, one of the best chapters on that is in Andrew McKnight's book, or on the Encyclopedia of Banking, and I'm one of the editors. Or, for example, again, if you wanted something on legal opinions, so there's a very good book on corporate finance, you can go and look at that there. There are other subjects that it's very good if you know where you can source them. So I strongly encourage you, I explained right at the beginning of the course, you do not need to buy anything, but you should still become available or become familiar with and have available at least the contents for all of these other separate books so that you know where to get information if you need to. If you can then also build that into your exam, that's a way of getting a lot of extra marks. Now, you do not have to do that. It's just that I'm recommending that you consider that because that's an easy way to demonstrate control, command, confidence, and to become very good at the subject and then to become even more useful as a lawyer afterwards. Other point to stress on this is that you do not need to be as concerned with plagiarism in the final exam as in the dissertation, but you should still be aware of this. So if you're going to borrow ideas from a specific source, have the source referred to. You don't need footnotes, as I mentioned. Sentence endnotes are enough. So for example, Wood, comma, title, brackets, whatever. Walker, unpublished 2022, if it's only something I've handed out in class. Anything like that. It looks very good. The problem is this, what you have to be very careful of is again being picked up for plagiarism. It's not as significant a problem in the examination because you're under the exam conditions and you're basically writing the answers to the questions, but you still have to be careful. The main issue that the university is concerned with on plagiarism is that you may be copying from other answers or just copying out text directly from other books or articles. That looks very bad. And if you get caught doing that, that will be a major problem. So you cannot just cut and paste information into your answers. That's plagiarism. What you can do is you paraphrase, and you have to learn to do this by way of simple academic exercise and professional exercise. You paraphrase the work that you're doing. You learn to restate, re-explain information in a slightly different way. And it's very easy. Just by moving some words, changing some words, altering the structure of the sentence, you can write almost the same thing but in a different way. That's what you need to learn. That's perfectly legitimate, that's perfectly proper, but again, still, if you've borrowed an idea or taken an idea from somewhere, you're meant to source that idea. That's what the endnotes are for. Original analysis isn't, again, as important. What you're basically trying to do is answer the question. The more information you can build in, which again, you will not be able to research in the exam, so you need to have this available pre-exam. So a lot of it, as I've said, is in the structural preparation. Structured preparation, have everything ready so that you can deal within the examination condition. It used to be that these were 24-hour take-home open book exams. The university this year has decided to keep the open book take-home exams, the online exams, but it's now restricted the time period to 4 hours. You don't need 24 hours. You should be able to answer the question, the paper, without any difficulty within 4 hours. All that would happen is students had additional time to do extra work if they wanted to. We found basically it should be completely unnecessary. You don't need 24 hours. 4 hours is more than enough. If you've only got 3 questions, that's an hour to plan and prepare and to read, and then 1 hour per question. You should not have any difficulty with that whatsoever. Completion. Once you start the paper, this constitutes a sitting. You've only got a limited number of sittings, so if you start the paper, you must complete it. Whatever happens, complete that paper. I've seen this happen before. Students have decided, oh, I don't feel well, or I have a sore head or something, and they walk out. And they think that they'll get some sympathy for that. They will not. And what's actually happened, I had one young man, very bright young man, and he walked out of his exam. And then for the resit, they wouldn't give him a visa, so he couldn't come back. So the university classified that as 2 sittings, and they wouldn't let him resit. And then because it was an important course, they weren't going to give him his degree. So because he had a sore head and walked out of 1 exam, it basically could have forfeited the whole degree. I had to send a large number of emails, and eventually we got him to be allowed to resit, and he passed very well. But that was completely unnecessary. Do not take chances. Whatever happens, complete that exam. If there is an earthquake, if aliens come, finish the exam once you've started it. Make sure you submit. You will do very well, but you have to ensure that you complete the paper, read all the questions, answer all the questions, and fill up your available space. Again, this happens a lot. If it's 1,500 per question, essentially, and 4,500 in total, try to use all of that up. Very often what might happen is that you read the question and you've only got enough information for maybe 2 or 3 pages. Well, that's not a problem, because all you do then is reread the question and work out, well, what else can I build in around that? So you're not rewriting the question. All you're thinking is, well, what else can I use to extend my answers? And as I've already explained, for example, I would always put in some historical material, maybe some structural material, or my key definitions. So even before I go into a loan problem or a bond problem or whatever else, I'm going to build in all this ancillary information around it. Try to use, if it's 1,500 words, try to use all of that. Because if you don't use all of that, you're not going to get marked on the basis of 100%. If you only use, for example, 1,000 words, you're effectively only getting marked on 65%. Try to make full use of all of the word length and time and space that you have got. If you prepare well and you've looked at all of the past papers, you should not have any difficulty with the final examination. You might get some surprises, but that's, examiners will do this deliberately. They may move parts of the course round, they may switch questions round, they may ask questions in a slightly different way or use words that weren't familiar deliberately to try and upset you, to try and put you off. That's not a problem. Just calm down, read the questions, decide which questions you want to do, put them in the right order, and then answer the paper. You will have no difficulty. If you've done the work, everybody is going to pass. The only question is, how well can you pass? Am I going to get a 60, a high 60, or a 70, or an 80? And you can get 80s if you do all of the work properly, if you have everything ready and prepared, and you write very high quality answers and incorporate as much relevant detail as you can get very high marks. Key point then is this: just be calm, be positive, and treat it as an exercise, not as like a test, but it's an opportunity to show off how much you know, what you've learned, and hopefully how much you've enjoyed the course. And if that comes through, this sort of positive, healthy attitude to show off what you've learned, you will do very well in the examination. You will not have any difficulty. Everyone will pass. It's just a question of how well you can pass to support your overall degree marks. But again, a lot of that simply comes down to technique, and the key point is structured revision, structured preparation, and then building in as much relevant detail in the final examination.